This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. I write about the digital signage business on my blog, 16.9. I celebrate great and intriguing work, I explore and explain new technology, and I filter the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to get beyond the press releases and trade show chatter and hear from some of the most successful, influential, and interesting people in this business. In this episode, I'm having a chat with Brian Fairfield, the CEO of NanoNation. I had a recording screw up. Damn you, cell phone interference, when I was down visiting Brian at the company offices in Lincoln, Nebraska. So this is a less than perfect take two interview that we did on Skype. First thing I wanted to ask, if you could give a bit of a background on what NanoNation is all about, how long it's been around, what's the sort of work you do, the kind of high level stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, happy to have you virtually here. It's another beautiful day in Lincoln, Nebraska, sunny and 70, so you're missing out.
Oh, well.
Happy to give you a little background on NanoNation. We're a 16-year-old company that is involved in digital signage and interactive experiences. But as a lot of companies do, we shifted our direction early on in our life cycle. So what's kind of interesting about our company is we didn't start out selling digital signage and interactive experiences. Actually, we started out really focusing on the kind of internet cafe marketplace and bringing the internet cafe into other places like bars, restaurants, truck stops, things like that. And so the start of our company saw us building out solutions that locked down a system so that we could control access to it, primarily for monetization purposes, file transfer to be able to update games and leaderboards and remote support. And the concept behind our company originally was to put these access points, we called them nano points, cleverly enough, out into the public marketplace, and people would pay to access these and get their email, surf the web, play games, and those sorts of things. And this was back at a time where not everybody had access to the internet all the time. And that sort of start really, didn't see us raking in the cash like the founders thought it would. And so we pivoted, like a lot of companies do. And our pivot came about by industry partners asking us to take some of those things we built, like the ability to lock down a desktop and file transfer remote support, and help them with interactive experiences in the public space. And so that's how we kind of shifted into this market and what got us our start in digital signage and interactive, which, by the way, for us, from the very advent of our entry into that marketplace, has always been kind of a single marketplace for us. We weren't a company that started with digital signage and added interactive or vice versa, but rather, some of our first solutions used concepts behind both. So a digital signage attract loop and an interactive experience. So it's all kind of been a single focus for us since that pivot in the early days.
So one of the things I suspect people would wonder is, why Lincoln, Nebraska? And what's it like as a company working in the middle of the Midwest and pretty reasonably well removed from the major centers?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the reason the company started in Lincoln, Nebraska was only because that's where the founders happened to be at the time. But it's been a place where we've been able to successfully grow and run the business. We're three or four blocks. I can look out the window and almost see the university if this building wasn't in my way. We get access to a lot of great young college students being trained in new digital technologies, and there are plenty of them to come and intern and work and become great employees as time goes on. Lincoln, Nebraska does present some challenges. There are places we go and meet our customers where they don't necessarily recognize Nebraska as a hotbed of innovation and technology. We go to New York or San Francisco or places like that where so many of our customers reside, and there's a barrier. There's a bit of a hill we have to climb sometimes to help them recognize that we actually do know what we're talking about when it comes to this market. That's easier now than it used to be, with so many brand name customers that we have that we can point to that have been with us you know, not just for 2 or 3 years, but for, you know, 10, 11, 12 years, it you know, helps give us that gravitas to hold those conversations.
Yeah, so you've got companies like Louis Vuitton and Harley, who you have had for a good many years, and you know that they aren't put off by having the head office in the middle of Nebraska.
No, not at all, and I'm not sure if that's because, you know, Harley's a fellow Midwest company from Milwaukee, or maybe in the head office of Louis Vuitton, they don't quite know where Nebraska is. I'm not sure. But certainly the New Yorkers that we deal with at Louis Vuitton know where we are. But you're right. You know, we had a new support hire start last week, and I did a company walkthrough with him recently. And, you know, we're talking about that, which helps us maintain customers. And really, once you've made the sale, once you've gotten past that, you know, that initial barrier of saying, hey, we're a company from Nebraska that can support you and help you engage with your customers and help you maintain a good customer experience. Once you've got past that sale process, it's a matter of living up to your promise as a supplier, as a vendor. And, you know, our production team and our support team do a great job of providing that good, high quality service that get you to the point where, you know, they don't question or care if you're in Nebraska or if you're on Mars, as long as you're doing what it is you say you're going to do at a fair price. We don't have any problem hanging on to those customers.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I came down to see you guys a couple weeks ago, you took me out to Grand Island, where I had the amazing experience of seeing the world's biggest pair of overalls.
Yes.
And it was at there was a larger reason for being there, a place called Racing Nebraska. And I gather that that's pretty representative of what's become a real growth area for your company.
Yeah, the attractions market, as we're starting to refer to it, is one that we didn't realize really existed 4 or 5 years ago. And we've done a lot of business there since that time. And Racing Nebraska is a great example because there are something like 12 different interactive experiences there where people can learn about different aspects of, you know, farm to table food growth, where their food comes from, how it's made, the production process, nutritional value, all those sorts of things, you know, through informational, interactive, through games, videos, other sorts of things. And it's bringing the museum into the digital age, if you will. And we've had a lot of fun with that recently. Racing Nebraska is a great one because it has 12 different experiences there, but many of them are places where we'll have, you know, 3 or 4 different digital experiences, like the Sports Hall of Fame here. But some just have one. You know, we've got one fantastic experience out at the, you know, Golden Spike Train Museum and a couple over at Joslin Art Museum. And we've got two more that we're going through with final paperwork this week. So it's become a really exciting area for us, and one that our developers and designers really enjoy working on, because it's a new fun experience each and every time. We have the luxury of being able to design some new things and figure out what it is that attraction, that museum, that educational experience is trying to convey, and then using digital and interactive to help send that message. And now that you've seen the world's largest pair of overalls, one of our other customers that we did a solution for, which is a donor wall, with a digital donor wall where the donor names also make up separate images and pictures, is in Boys Town. And Flanagan's Boys Town has the world's largest ball of stamps. So next time you're in Nebraska, you can check that one out.
Oh my God.
Yep.
The whole interactive piece that you guys do, I've known that you've done interactive for a long time. You've done a lot of work with Build-A-Bear, Barney's, clients like that. But I would tend to think of you guys, and I would think the ecosystem in general thinks of you guys as a digital signage company that does a little bit interactive, but it's actually a pretty big chunk of what you do, is it not?
It is. It's probably about half of what we do. I haven't run the numbers lately, but probably half our deployments out there are interactive. you know, some of those things like the in-room experience and celebrity cruises make up a large number of deployed units. Certainly, when you talk about a digital signage deployment, those sometimes come in numbers that are much larger than, you know, the single complex interactive experiences we do. But those single complex interactive experiences that we were just talking about are kind of new in our business. And, you know, prior to that, it's been, you know, the same large-scale retail deployment interactive that we've done, just doing it interactive instead of signage. And, you know, we don't really go out in the market and say, you know, hey, I'd like to sell digital signs today, or hey, I'd like to sell an interactive experience today. We really try to build good relationships with customers in our target markets and find out what it is they're trying to do with their customers, what they're trying to do in their store, how they're trying to engage. And the engagement purpose will often lead us to a digital signage or an interactive solution. Now, of course, some cases customers come to you and say, here's exactly what you need, and that's fine too.
So, I mean, I would imagine most software companies in the signage ecosystem do solution-based selling, but it sounds, from what I experienced in talking to you and your team, is that that's really, really front and center in what you do to get right to the core question of, okay, what are we doing here and why?
Yeah, very much so. It is absolutely in our DNA. We do not go in and try to fit pre-made solution in very many cases into a customer need. You know, clearly, something like a digital sign is fairly off-the-shelf solutions. And we have a lot of configurable products. And by that, I mean, you know, we don't have to do new development work for a lot of our interactive experiences. We can put a little PM time in and a little bit of design time in to give our customer the right color and the right logos, and then, you know, use our project management team to fill in some of the database along with the customer to give them a unique experience, all the way to the other end of the spectrum where it's highly customized and very unique on a per customer basis. So it really runs along a pretty broad continuum, and we don't much mind where our customer is interested in being or needs to be on that continuum. With many customers, it's a combination of a discussion of what they're trying to accomplish. And that might be something like, you know, we want to cross sell this product in this particular environment, and here are some different options to do that, and here are some that are lower cost and medium cost and higher cost, and they have different levels of engagement, different levels of customization, and potentially different success rates. And so, yeah, we go in with a fairly open mind when we start talking to customers.
So how do you compete with the 100, 200, 300, 400, whatever the real number is, numbers of software CMSs out there that, you know, hang out a shingle and say, we do that?
Yeah, well, it's a crowded market. And anytime you have a crowded market, it can be a difficult market to play in. There are a couple things that we try to do to differentiate ourselves. You know, the first of those is, you know, we put a lot of effort into our reliability. We concentrate on it, we report on it on a couple topics weekly and a couple topics monthly. And we really, really focus on building our software so that when it gets out into the field and it's deployed, it works. And we try to talk about that as much as we can. We communicate that to our potential clients and convince them that what we know is true will work for them. And that is, you know, when you get a sign out there in the field and it turns black, it does more damage to your brand than not having a sign at all. So support is an area we really try to differentiate ourselves and set ourselves apart. You know, and then the ability to not only play in the signage space, but also do interactive should our clients, you know, want to do that. That's a challenge because sometimes it confuses customers when they think, ah, gosh, I just want a simple signage solution. And, you know, our challenge from a sales standpoint is to convince them we can do that simple signage stuff, but we can also, if you decide to take the step into interactive, we can handle that as well. You know, there are some good players out there, and that, you know, whatever that number is, I don't know what it is either. But there are, you know, there are a couple dozen companies out there who have a solid enterprise solution. there are a lot of companies out there who don't, but say they do. And, you know, that part of that is a sales job. We point, you know, and try to differentiate ourselves. We point to the fact that we've got customers that are signing on to their, you know, their fourth 3-year contract with us. And that's not a rare occurrence. That's a pretty regular occurrence. And we hope that when we point to something like that, our customers say, okay, you know, these guys have enough major Fortune 500 worldwide brands that are using their software to deploy that they can probably do it for me too.
Yeah, and years ago you were doing those kiosk applications that were doing payment processing, so that stuff couldn't go down.
No, it can't. And if any of them do for even a minute, the phone starts ringing, because those payment processing kiosks get a lot of use. There's a large unbanked population in America, and many people pay their bills through systems and solutions like that. So yeah, they get some heavy traffic. Our phone doesn't ring often. People don't believe it. It rang 63 times last week with incoming calls. It's pretty phenomenal. But you know, if something does go down out there, it'll ring a lot more.
So you came into NanoNation as VP Sales, correct?
Correct.
And when did you?
9 years ago.
9 years ago. And, you know, I've been covering the signage market for a long time. I knew a little bit the folks who were founders. And there was a point when both Bradley Walker and Brian Ardinger, who were sort of the well-known people at Nano, who both left in fairly rapid succession. And at the time, I wondered, okay, what's going on here? Was that a difficult time for the company?
You know, companies go through a lot of transitions over time, and you know, different needs and skills and a different focus is required at different times. I think that Bradley and Brian did a phenomenal job of making us a force to be reckoned with in the interactive and digital signage marketplace. You know, they were, for many years there, really omnipresent in all of the industry trade shows and, you know, on all the panels, and really spent a lot of time making sure that this little company from Lincoln, Nebraska was well known and got some of that early attention that helped us grow and helped us become the company we are today. And so, you know, we as an organization owe a ton to those guys. They really did a fantastic job. You know, and they're still doing good things today. Bradley is at Apple, and Brian is working in the entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Lincoln, Nebraska, which is thriving, and he's been a big part of helping that that really grow and prosper here.
And since you joined, and since that time, the company's grown quite a bit, I gather.
Yeah, it's probably 40% larger in the past couple of years. It's grown really well. The nice part about that is that's our top line. Our bottom line revenue has grown significantly faster than that, which is really where we try to focus. We run a pretty lean machine here. Almost everybody in our shop either sells something, supports something, or makes something, and we like to keep it that way.
And you're a privately held company?
We are a privately held company, very small group of investors.
Profitable?
Yes, we are.
Good for you. Now, with all those aforementioned companies that are out there, there's a lot of expectation that things are going to thin out just because they'll have to. Where do you see the industry in the next 2-3 years? I realize that's difficult, but that's why you're a CEO.
You know, when I came to this organization in 2007, I came out of the private equity market. I was with a private equity fund for 3 years, and then I moved over to do a nonprofit that helped companies, startup companies, find private dollars here in Nebraska. And one of the things you learn in that field is it's exciting to get involved in a growing marketplace. And so I was originally attracted to NanoNation because the whole marketplace was growing and it looked like there were too many competitors in there. It looked like an exciting opportunity for a roll-up strategy and consolidation, and the strong players would really come out of this with a solid market position. But what I've learned since I got into the market, although there has been some consolidation, most of the companies that are operating in the software space aren't going to gain a lot by purchasing many of the competitors. There are really, three different reasons you could buy a competitive business, and most of those in our marketplace don't provide enough value to make it worthwhile. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of intra-company consolidation in the software marketplace, because I don't think there's a lot of value there. I think you're going to see a continued effort from the peripheral industries, the outside industries, whether that's the agency marketplaces or the hardware manufacturers or some of the ad companies, spending money on buying good companies in the CMS space. I think you're going to see some of that happening. We are seeing some of that happening around the marketplace right now, and I think some of that will continue. I'd like to tell you that you'll see more of these competitors go away. And while I think some of them will, I think the barriers to entry to get into the digital signage marketplace are pretty thin. Now, to get to the point where you're actually providing an enterprise level CMS solution is a pretty significant barrier to entry. But to get into the basics and say you provide that, it's a pretty quick entry. So I think you'll see still a lot of players 3 or 4 years down the road. I think many of them, if I were to guess, I'd say a third of those would be completely different players. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll see some continued purchasing on the periphery, but not between software players. We'll see.
So when you have very large companies like Google and Adobe getting into digital signage, does that make you go, uh-oh, or oh, that's interesting?
Oh, a little bit of both, I worry about everything, and I think it's somewhat irresponsible not to worry about everything. So, sure, I worry about a company like Google getting in this marketplace because they have the resources and the power to could dominate a market if they really set their mind to it. I don't think that will happen. I think they've got a little bit different focus than some of the things we do and some of the things many of our competitors in this marketplace do. And I think if they do come into it, there's only a portion of our business that they could even successfully compete for. But they're worth keeping an eye on. Players like that and, other folks have been in it. Cisco's been in it, Intel's been in it, and for the most part, they're back out of it. But who knows what Google will do.
And getting into retail, which is, one of your primary focuses, they will discover pretty quickly, if they've not already, that it's hard work.
Yeah, it is. It's a world with high demands. The retail marketplace has been, they've been having a tough time. It's been, up and down over the past couple of years in terms of same store sales. And, our hope is that more of these retail customers, look for other ways to engage and interact with their customers. And I think digital is one of the ways they're trying to do that. We've engaged with some retailers, outdoor shopping mall, not too far from here, really looked at digital as a way of tackling some of the key metrics that you face in those environments. And they knew what their metrics were. Their metrics were things like, the average shopper at an outlet mall spends 41 minutes and visits 3 stores while they're at an outlet mall. So our entire digital solution package was centered around how do we help those shoppers visit one extra store while they're there? Can we get them to visit 4 rather than just visit 3? And of course, that has a commensurate increase in the amount of time they spend. And that obviously leads to higher sales per square foot. And when we can talk about digital in terms of real retail outcomes, you know, that's where we can really get excited about helping our customers and doing the things they need to do to survive and thrive in this world of online shopping.
Does that make a difference to talk about the real business applications as opposed to the shiny objects and eye candy that has been sold as digital signage in retail forever?
Well, it kind of depends on who you're talking to, and you can go into the same brand. We can deal with some large retail customers that we could have 10 or 12 different contacts in there, some in merchandising, some in marketing, some in IT. And in any of those cases, they might have a different idea of what it is that's interesting and exciting. So some of them may be very excited about the shiny object, and that isn't without merit, because the shiny object, the cool experience, is an attempt for that brand to say, hey, we're cutting edge, we're new, we're relevant, we're somebody that you can rely on to be associated with you in the modern age. It's tougher to measure, it's tougher to take that activity and say, yes, that did lead to a maintenance or an increase in higher same-store sales. It's a lot easier when you have a specific call to action or a specific activity that digital is trying to convey, because you can directly measure it. Now, a lot of our solutions start out with an intent by the customer to directly measure the outcome of a solution, and don't always follow through with that. But short answer is, it depends on who you're talking to, Dave.
Yeah, I think we could have a very long conversation about what constitutes experience in a retail environment, what actually works. But thank you very much, Brian, for doing this today.
Anytime. Thanks, Dave. We'll talk to you again soon.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net every day, and subscribe to this podcast as I stick my shiny new Tascam recorder in the faces of more industry people in the coming weeks. Thanks again for listening. 16.9, the blog, and now the podcast are both properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. I'm Dave Haynes.